Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in to the program tonight. I have a couple of items here that are just really astonishing. I mean, really, really astonishing. Here's the first one. According to recent media reports, Democrats stand to lose as many as 8,000 congressional seats and more than 917 gubernatorial races in November's midterm elections. Quote, Republicans are poised to pick up 1,500 seats in Ohio alone and could wind up with 23,576-12 majority in the Senate, end quote, Beltway Observer Isaac Hunt said Wednesday, noting the GOP's advantage is likely to increase by Election Day, given that its candidates are outspending their opponents by some $900 trillion. Quote, with Democratic disapproval ratings in the quadruple digits, it's a foregone conclusion that Republicans will not only retake Congress, but hold it for the next 20 to 25,000 years, end quote. Experts also predicted that the one-sided election result would cause Barack Obama to die on the spot, at which point the nation's leading conservative talk radio host would be sworn in as president of the United States forever. I'll be damned. That's either from CNBC or The Onion. One of the two. Now, that is just warm-up. And that's obviously a bunch of hog snot. But this isn't. Let us get in the Wayback Machine for a couple of minutes here. Back in 1981, Anita Hill, do you remember her? Lawyer, law professor. Anita Hill became an attorney advisor to Clarence Thomas, who is now a Supreme Court justice. Clarence Thomas at the time was at the U.S. Department of Education. When Clarence Thomas became chairman of the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, Anita Hill went to that bureaucracy with Thomas and his then secretary, Diane Holt, to serve as his special assistant. Anita Hill alleges that it was during those two periods, during her employment at the Education Department and at EEOC, that Clarence Thomas made sexually provocative statements. Now, you have to be over a certain age to remember all this. This was scandalous television during the confirmation of Clarence Thomas back in 1991. Now, although Anita Hill was a career employee and therefore had the option of remaining at the Department of Education, she testified that she followed Clarence Thomas to EEOC because, quote, the work itself was interesting, and at that time it appeared that the sexual overtures from Mr. Thomas had ended, end quote. Also, she testified that she wanted to work in the civil rights field and that she believed that, quote, at that time, the Department of Education itself was a dubious venture, end quote. On October 11, 1991, Anita Hill was called to testify before the Senate confirmation hearing of then Supreme Court nominee Clarence Thomas. Anita Hill's allegations against Clarence Thomas were made public when information from an FBI interview about the allegations was leaked to the media days before the final Senate vote on his appointment. Thomas had been nominated by then-President George Herbert Walker Bush to replace retiring Justice Thurgood Marshall, you know, the Negro seat on the Supreme Court, apparently. Anita Hill's testimony included a wide variety of language that she allegedly was subjected to by Clarence Thomas and that she found inappropriate. Quote, Anita Hill, he spoke about acts that he had seen in pornographic films involving such matters as women having sex with animals and films showing group sex or rape scenes. On several occasions, Mr. Thomas told me graphically of his own sexual prowess. Mr. Thomas was drinking a Coke in his office. He got up from the table at which we were working, went over to his desk to get the Coke, looked at the can and asked, quote, who's put pubic hair on my Coke? End quote. Four individuals, Ellen Wells, John W. Carr, Judge Susan Herchner, and Joel Paul, all testified that Hill had been upset at the time she worked for Thomas about what she had said was sexual harassment by him. Angela Wright, another of Clarence Thomas's subordinates, stated that she had not considered the behavior to be sexual harassment, but that others might. She was interviewed by Senate Judiciary Committee staff, but did not testify at the hearings. Miss Wright had been fired by Clarence Thomas from the EEOC. Anita Hill's accusations were viewed suspiciously due to their timing. And the he said, she said nature of the discussions made privately between Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill. There was no way to either substantiate her accusations or definitely refute them. Hence, the full Senate rejected Anita Hill's accusations as being purely politically based. No one has since been able to provide definitive proof to either refute or prove Anita Hill's accusations. Clarence Thomas made a blanket denial of the accusations, claiming this was a, quote, high-tech lynching, end quote. After extensive debate, the U.S. Senate confirmed Clarence Thomas by a vote of 52-48, which, by the way, was one of the closest confirmation votes, if not the closest, in Senate history for anyone nominated on the Supreme Court. Okay, that was the Clarence Thomas, Anita Hill melodrama. Now, if you were around to watch that testimony on television, as I was, I don't think there's any doubt that Anita Hill was telling the truth. She had nothing to gain by exposing herself as a victim of sexual harassment. She didn't sue. She didn't ask for any compensation. She had been interviewed by the FBI, as the FBI is wont to do with all of their Supreme Court or presidential nominees. It doesn't make any difference who they are. They are vetted, and part of vetting includes talking to people who knows the nominee, whether that nominee is a Supreme Court justice or Solicitor General or Secretary of Defense nominee, you know, whatever. That's just the way the process works. Anita Hill had never meant her testimony to be made public. She simply, in my opinion, told the truth. That's all. Clarence Thomas, who George Herbert Walker Bush said was the best possible nominee to be a Supreme Court justice in America, went on to a purely bland, nothing, indistinguishable career. He is a cipher on the Supreme Court. No one will ever remember him except perhaps for the irony of George Herbert Walker Bush selecting Clarence Thomas, because he had black skin, to be the successor to a real giant in American jurisprudence, Thurgood Marshall. The irony of selecting a clown to take the seat once occupied by a giant. That's how Clarence Thomas will be remembered, if at all. Now, that's preamble to what I have for you when we come back. Now, you know that Uncle Clarence married Ginny Thomas. Ginny Thomas, who is very Caucasian. Anita Hill was African American. Clarence Thomas is Clarence Thomas. So we have kind of a biracial situation here. Why am I mentioning Ginny Thomas? Oh my God. Stick around.
Should I run for president? Mother, should I trust the government?
past the hour. Virginia Thomas, or as she's known to her friends as Ginny, in January this year, Ginny Thomas, the wife of the Supreme Court Justice, started a nonprofit Tea Party lobbying group called Liberty Central to organize conservative activism, issue scorecards for members of Congress, and to be involved in elections. Ginny was interviewed by Sean Hannity on his Fox News rubber bungalow show in June of 2010. When asked about potential conflicts due to her husband's position, Ginny replied, quote, "There's a lot of judicial wives and husbands out there causing trouble. I'm just one of many." Oh, Ginny. She was with her husband during his Senate confirmation hearings for the Supreme Court and thanked all his supporters after he was confirmed. During the confirmation hearing, some Democratic senators had complained about Ginny's work and brought up claims of conflict of interest. She later was interviewed by People magazine, where she described the difficult process her hubby had while he was under the scrutiny of the Senate confirmation hearing. She referred to the confirmation process as, quote, a trial by fire for her husband. He called it a high-tech lynching. She called it a trial by fire. Oh, my. In 1994, Ginny worked for Representative Dick Armey as a policy analyst. Conflict of interest issues were also raised in 2000 when Ginny worked for the Heritage Foundation, collecting resumes for potential presidential appointments in the George W. Bush administration. Ginny later served as White House liaison to the Heritage Foundation. And then in January this year, Ginny started her Tea Party group. So far, so good. Except this past weekend, Ginny Thomas, the wife of Supreme Court Associate Justice Clarence Thomas, left a message on the voicemail of Anita Hill. The same Anita Hill who had accused her husband of sexual harassment during his confirmation hearings. A spokeswoman for Ginny confirmed all this today. In a message left, this is the way the New York Times is reporting, ABC also reported a bit of it, in response to questions about the call relayed through a publicist, Ginny confirmed that she had left a message on Miss Hill's voicemail. Ginny said, "I did place a call to Miss Hill at her office, extending an olive branch to her after all these years, in hopes that we could ultimately get past what happened so long ago," Ginny said in a statement provided to the New York Times. Here is the voicemail. Quote, "Good morning, Anita Hill. It's Ginny Thomas. I just wanted to reach across the airwaves and the years to ask you to consider something. I would love you to consider an apology sometime and some full explanation of why you did what you did with my husband. So give it some thought and certainly pray about this and come to understand why you did what you did. Okay, have a good day." End quote. "I did place a call to Miss Hill," Ginny said, "extending an olive branch to her after all these years in hopes that we could ultimately get past what happened so long ago. If the bitch will just apologize!" Excuse me. Lost it there for a minute. "I'm the wife of a Supreme Court Associate Justice. I'm not supposed to say words like bitch, but she is a bitch! She tried to get in my husband's drawers! What was Clarence supposed to do? Holy God!" Oh, I'm sorry. I did it again. I just think it's time that we get past all this craziness. Do you know what it's like being married to a Supreme Court justice who is as weird as my husband? Do you know what he asked me to do? I mean, I realize I'm his wife, but do I have to dress up in those robes every night? And play old tapes of Long Dong Silver? That seems to be the one he likes the most. But that Anita Hill. That Anita Hill! I America just wring that bitch's neck. I did it again. Oh, quick. Wait. Let me get a phone call in to Dick Armey. Dick Armey can call me. No, I'll call Sean. Sean will help me. Sean Hannity will help me. Oh, my goodness. Oh, I hope this never gets out. Is there any way I can call up and have that message erased off Anita's phone thingy? Oh, God. I shouldn't have done this. I shouldn't have done this. You know, I began my group with a lot of money from undisclosed contributors, and I don't want to call any attention to myself, but I've had it with that bitch! I've had it with that bitch! Oh! I don't know what to do. What am I gonna do? What am I gonna do?
Nasty boys. Nasty boys. Let me see your nasty biting. Listen up.
More flying monkey free fun and frivolity with Mike Malloy.
Well, not really tonight. We are chock-a-block with flying monkeys. 25 before the hour. Ginny Thomas. You gotta wonder, why now? Why would she leave a voicemail on Anita Hill's phone about an event that happened 20 years ago that there's not a male in America who's familiar with the hearing and what Clarence was accused of. There's not a male in America that doubts that Clarence was hitting on, oh, Anita. Hey, baby, let me show you this videotapes by Long Dong Silver. You know what that means, huh? You're a law professor. You know what this means? Yeah, come here, baby. Come here. What you wearing today? Oh, Lord. There's not a man in America, even all those white Republican senators that voted for him, that has any doubt that old Uncle Clarence was doing the funky chicken all around Anita Hill. Oh! So now, 20 years later, Ginny Thomas leaves a voicemail. And you better apologize to my husband, bitch. The only thing she did was leave out the word bitch. And then when Anita turns it over to the New York Times and ABC News, Ginny said, I was trying to reach out over the years and over the time to a peace offering. It's an olive branch. You know, I really do love Anita Hill. I think she is just so sweet. I don't think so, Ginny. In her 1998 book, Anita Hill noted that she had been accused by Ginny of harboring a romantic interest in Clarence. Anita wrote, quote, Virginia Thomas and I have never met, and one can imagine that she is guided by her own romantic interest in her husband when she assumes that other women find him attractive as well. End quote.
Slice and dice. You go, Anita.
You see, her husband is an ugly. He is an ugly man.
Clarence is ugly. He is so ugly.
How ugly is he?
He has to sneak up on a glass of water to get a drink.
Oh, Ginny. So Ginny Thomas, the teabag woman who sees no problem with doing what she's doing. What's her organization called? freedom from everything or something, freedom liberties or liberties, freedom armpit, I don't know. ABC News' Jake Tapper and KGO's Mark Matthews report the story this way. A few days ago, Brandeis University professor Anita Hill received a message on her voicemail at work.
Good morning, Anita Hill. It's Jenny Thomas,
etc., etc., etc. Anita Hill didn't think the call was real. She told ABC News, quote, I initially thought it was a prank, and if it was, I thought the authorities should know about it. She reported the call to campus police. Boo, 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 boo. Mark Matthews of ABC affiliate KGO, excuse me, learned about this and reached out to Virginia Thomas. Thomas emailed Mark Matthews saying, I did place a call to Ms. Hill at her office, extending an olive branch, etc., etc., etc. Anita Hill tells ABC News, quote, even if it wasn't a prank, it was in no way conciliatory for her to begin with the presumption that I did something wrong in 1991. I simply testified to the truth of my experience. For her to say otherwise is not extending an olive branch, it's accusatory. She goes on, I don't apologize. I have no intention of apologizing. I stand by my testimony in 1991. Boop, 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 boop. Anita Hill remembered that when Justice Clarence Thomas's autobiography was released in 2007, the Thomases were interviewed by ABC. ABC. When you think about Anita Hill, was she a pawn? Was she a liar? Thomas, a justice, Uncle Clarence. I really don't care enough. Let me be honest with you. I went through that during the hearing. I thought about it. I really don't care. What I care about is that the responsible people didn't put an end to this nonsense. Ginny chimed in. I think there's a lot of theories, but I hope she once one day calls up and apologizes. And I look forward to forgiving her. End quote. And she went on. I'm sure she got swept up into something bigger than she may have understood at the beginning of whatever she was doing. But I think she owes us an apology, and I look forward to receiving that phone call or that visit one day. End quote, Ginny. So Anita tells ABC News, quote, so this isn't new territory. Quote, oh my God! Oh, my God. What is Jenny doing? What in the world? What's she afraid? Oh, wait a minute. Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Do you feel maybe Clarence said to her one night, come on, Jenny. Come on, Jenny. Come on. Come on, Jenny. Yeah. Do you know what I do all day? I make important decisions. I am a Supreme Court justice. Now tell me again, what did you do today? You left a phone message on her phone? Ginny, what? You're on ABC Tele? What? You're in the New York Times? What? Michael in Roswell writes, this is a bit bizarre. It would seem that Virginia Thomas might have a political motive in all this, hoping perhaps to stir up old resentments in the right wing just before the election. Maybe it just seems blatant because she's now a political operative with some anonymous cash to spread around. But leaving a voicemail message to Anita Hill requesting an apology 20 years after the fact, after the treatment Anita Hill received at the hands of the right wing, and after her husband has proven himself to be a virtual cipher on the bench? Very odd indeed. Michael and Roswell. Well, I don't think any of this is odd. I really don't. Well, I mean, in the grander scheme of things, of course it's odd. It borders on, I don't know, something is going on. All right, I'll just go ahead and say it. Obviously, Jenny Thomas is a drunk. Now, years and years and years ago, I dated a woman who, I was fairly serious about, and I found out she was an alcoholic. I remember at the time my sister said, "Does so-and-so drink?" was my sister's way of saying, "Who are you hooked up with here?" And irony of ironies, this is back around the early 90s, 1991. So it suddenly dawned on me after watching Blank's behavior, really watching it for a while, oh my God, I thought she was just happy all the time. Well, I wound up going to Al-Anon meetings. Anybody out there familiar with Al-Anon? That's where you go if you have a family member or a loved one who is a drunk. And what they teach you is how to detach from the drunk's behavior. Well, in the process of being in those groups and listening, I never did give my story. I was just fascinated listening. And trust me, there's an Al-Anon meeting, 100 of them a day, all over the place, in any city of the size of Atlanta. But I remember sitting there listening to some of the stories of people who's mostly husbands. I was one of the few men in this group. How the husbands handled their lives as an alcoholic. And it was not pretty. And some of the outbursts, the behavioral deviations from anything that'd be considered normal, the self-destructive behavior. So when I saw this story tonight, it was like, hey, I remember hearing about this in Al-Anon. Jenny's a drunk. Oh my God. Clarence, get your ass into Al-Anon quick.
And now I'm known she tipsy. She put her body on me and she keeps staring me right in my eyes. No telling what I'm gonna do. Baby, I would rather show you what you've been missing in your life. When I get inside, girl, what you drinking? Gonna let it sink in here for the weekend. Thinking we can see what we can be if we press fast forward.
I have a direct order to the trolls, the right-wing trolls. Don't you guys let me down now. I want to see a clip of what I just said. I want to see it out there all over the right-wing puke sites. I want to see it on Glenn Beck's program. Well, not see it. I want to hear about it. I want you little right-wing bastards to do exactly what you're supposed to do. Take what I just said about Jenny and Uncle Clarence and Professor Hill and put it out there. Put it out there. Do it. you little weasels.
Do it!
Thank you. Amy, who listens on KPOJ, writes, it was announced today that the Obama administration has approved the sale of fighter jets and other military weaponry to Saudi Arabia. Yeah, what Amy doesn't mention is the biggest arms sale of $50 billion spread over a couple of years. You know, even for the Saudis, that's more than, you know, money for dinner and dancing. Amy writes, the same Saudi Arabia who spawned Osama bin Laden gave birth to 15 of the 19 hijackers who flew commercial airplanes into buildings in around New York and home to the Wasabi sect of Islam that promotes the destruction of the United States. So now they can fly military jets and bomb us. Who in this administration approved this sale and why? Is this still the Bush crime family? This administration makes it so hard to keep supporting officials who say they are Democrats, but are not. Amy, you're a victim of the same thing that I was until I woke up and smelled the anesthetic. There is no such thing, with one or two exceptions. And oh my God, you have to really hunt. And they are soon going to be history, too. There is nothing out there even remotely resembling the kind of Democrats or Republicans. Republicans have gone completely collectively mad. Democrats have just given up. The Democrats in Congress right now just want to keep their jobs. There's a lot of unemployment out here, right? So, Amy, the people who approved the sale are not Democrats. They're not Republicans. They're the people who now run this country. Corporatists. And it doesn't make any difference if they have a D or an R or a cross, a Star of David, a bottle of bean juice behind their names. They are corporatists. And as far as selling, look, Amy, for God's sake, I mean, what do we have left to export? Big ticket items other than massive amounts of weaponry. Are you kidding? I mean, I don't mean to yell, Amy. You know, because, you know, I'm in the same kind of mindset you are. Is there nobody in the Democratic Party to get Barack Obama's ear and say, please stop? Are there no adult Republicans left? No, they're not. The Republicans are spoiled little bastard. I don't know. They're like what? Fifth graders running around the playground at recess. I'm going to beat your ass. I'm going to beat yours. No, you're not. Your mama smells. Your mama wears combat boots. Your daddy's a drunk. I mean, the Republican Party is a bunch of children. Did you see that debate between Coons and the lady who's not a witch? And every Wiccan in America goes, whew, thank God. Did you see that debate the other night? Where Christine O'Donnell, I mean, the audience laughed at her. When Coons said the First Amendment guarantees separation of church and state. And she looked at him and the audience was laughing at her because she didn't know. And she looked at Mr. Coons and she said, oh. You're saying that the First Amendment says separation of church and state? And again, the audience went, and this poor brain-dead five-year-old looks at the audience with a knowing smirk as if to say, yeah, laugh along with me. Isn't this guy a dumbass? Christine, they were laughing at you! You! Where in the First Amendment, Mr. Coons, does it say separation of church and state? Where? So, Amy, when a Democratic president or, I don't know, Pentagon or whoever it is, authorizes $50 billion in armaments to Saudi Arabia, which frees up other money. They don't have to, you know, they buy our weaponry, so they don't have to build plants to make fighter jets and tanks and bombs and death. They can use their money then to set up more Wahhabist schools, to kind of like Christian fundamentalist schools. No, not like Catholic schools, like these, for the most part, whites only. They came up in the South like mushrooms in a cow field after a rainstorm here, after the Civil Rights Act of 1964 was passed, and they haven't stopped. So, Amy, no, they're not Democrats, and the Republicans are not Republicans. We have crossed through some kind of a blood-brain barrier, and we're wandering around, obviously, inside Dick Cheney's fevered skull. Ooh. Stay with us. I told you to get your asses to work and cut that piece of audio out and get it out there. You're not supposed to sit around. That's the best I've got for you tonight. So go get that. Go get it. Get it out there. Get it out there. Yeah. Amy, who listened to KPOJ, was talking about the Obama administration approved the sale of fighter jets to Saudi Arabia. And Amy's upset. And so am I. However, Reg at TV News Lies puts it this way. Ask Amy if she was upset by the sale of 20 F-35 fighter planes to Israel earlier this month. F-35, state-of-the-art American high-tech death in the sky. For the record, Israel has an option for 75 more. I ask this question because I can't remember the last time Saudi Arabia invaded anyone or made a move that was not totally controlled by the United States. Primarily, because the Saudi family stays in power only because we support them. But for the same record, I remember that Israel does what it wants, invades whomever it wants, illegally occupies any territories it wants, defies any UN resolutions it wants, builds whatever settlements it wants, and dares anyone in the power structure of the United States to dare criticize its actions. Let's get real. Please. The arms being sold to the Saudis can only be used against Iran. Should we order them to do so? Reg. And Prairie 2 writes regarding the same sale. Cheer up, Mike. This will probably be the last big sale of fighter aircraft to the Saudis, assuming they even finish this order. You can expect McDonnell Douglas to start assembling fighter jets in China instead of just making the critical parts there. You people are really, you're all realists, but damn, some of you can be cynical. You old progressives, you. Yeah, good point, Reg. Absolute good point. And if Amy's listening, I'm sure Amy was probably as upset by any... Oh, I don't know what Amy was thinking. But Amy, Reg, Bruce, thanks for writing. By the way, coming up next hour, John Ashcroft. Yeah, this is like old bastards night, right? We had Ginny Thomas and Uncle Clarence. Now we got John Ashcroft coming up. Man. I can't get over these teabaggers. And the fact that people are voting for them. As Bill Maher pointed out on Lawrence O'Donnell's program tonight, in the so-called debate between Harry Reid and Sharon Angle the other night, Harry Reid came across like a total half-wit. He really did, let's face it. He said, so Sharon Angle, who reminds you of the old lady at the end of the block who has 20 dead cats in her basement, you know, she's the one who's neck and neck with the Senate Majority Leader, for Christ's sake. And then over here in New Hampshire, you have a woman who doesn't even understand the First Amendment. And with that little baby face that O'Donnell, or what's her name? Christine O'Donnell, and then you have this crazy, wild-eyed psychopath out of Minnesota, Michelle Bachmann, who scares the Christ out of me. I mean, she really does. This is a woman you know. You just know that her most favorite restaurant is a church graveyard. You know this about her. And then who else do you have? The grand mammy of them all, Palin. Who is nothing more or less than a woman who wants desperately to be an X-rated porn star. She just doesn't know how to make the turn. Oh, my God, every time she jumps up on a stage, all the white teabagger males go, oh, damn, look at that. Woo! Son of a bitch, I'd vote for her for anything. Look at these people. This Mario or Marco or whatever the hell his name is, Rubio, down in Florida. Does this guy ever smile? I mean, he looks like, I don't know, like he came out of the movie Toy Story 3. He's one of the toys, only all of a sudden he got big. And he just walks around, I'll kill you. I'll kill you too. I'm going to stomp on you. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill all of you. Someday I'm going to kill Castro. I'm going to kill. And then, yeah, like a Chucky doll. And then you have Rand Paul. Rand Paul, in his debate the other day, turns to his Democratic opponent and says, have you no decency? And what did the opponent do? The opponent had brought up the fact that Rand Paul 20 years ago, I don't know, what did he do? He said Christians are ass wipes or something. I have no idea. I really don't care.
He kidnapped a co-ed and held her in a back seat and said worship the Aqua Buddha and tried to force her to take bong hits. That's what I know.
And the problem with that? I don't get it either. I mean, that sounds like just normal behavior to me. And who else? Who else? Who else? Who else we got? Who else? Oh, yeah! How can we forget Palladino? Oh, my God! what's his first name? Carl. He's got to have a name. Carl Chops Palladino or something. I don't know. You know, this guy. Hey, you write any more about my daughter, man? I'm going to take you out. Yeah, how you going? Yeah, that's right. Carl the Horse Palladino. I'm sorry, I forgot. There's too many of them. This is a goddamn circus. This is like that Todd Browning movie, Freaks. One of us. Woogle woggle. One of us. Gooble gobble. Is that what they are? One of us. You never saw Freaks? That movie that was made in the 30s by Todd Browning? Woo!
Just watch C-SPAN.
Carl the Horse Palladino.
I'll take you out, mofo.
How you gonna do that?
Just watch.
The old lady at the end of the block with 20 dead cats in the basement. If that doesn't describe Sharon Angle, what did she say the other night to a bunch of Asian students?
I'm Asian American too, Angle. Harry Reid, man up. Man up, Harry Reid. Like me. Man up. You want to see my collection of dead animals? Come on over sometime. It stinks in the basement, but Jesus Christ, you'll get a kick out of it. They're all mummified anyway. Hey.
Is she the one that has juice with everybody, or is that
somebody? Juice. Yeah, she's got juice. That woman wouldn't know juice if it sloshed around her ankles. I mean, come on. Juice? Or was she saying Jews? I don't know. I think it was juice. What a freak show. This is democracy in the United States of America? These are Senate candidates, and one's a candidate for governor. Are you freaking kidding me? No. Nobody's kidding you, Mike. It's for real. It's for real. Christine O'Donnell has no clue what the First Amendment says. Sharon Angle? Sharon Angle? She's a keeper of dead cats. Marco Rubio? You know, I finally figured out why he never smiles. He always had to play in the swimming pool, that hideous game. Marco Polo. Marco Polo. Marco Polo. Marco Polo. Marco Polo. Marco Polo.
Arm yourself with the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Oh, let's not forget, also while we're naming some of these crazy, crazy teabaggers, and almost all of them are women, let's not forget Linda McMahon of Connecticut, who made her name walking into a professional wrestling ring, grabbing wrestlers by the scrotum and dragging them around the ring, and then pretending like she was cutting off her husband's penis because he was having an affair with somebody, you know, on national television. And this woman is, you know, she's like the eBay person out there in California. Linda McMahon is trying to buy... is it Senate? Is that what she's running for, Senate? I can't keep these freaks straight. Oh, my God. And Carly Fiorina standing there on the stage with John McCain the other night when McCain talks about Barbara Boxer as if she is some, I don't know, some vicious anti-American, military-hating bitch from hell. And is it Barbara? No, it's not Barbara. Is it Barbara Boxer's husband? No, wait a minute. Which one? I can't keep any of them straight. Whose husband is a military contractor or sells guns and bullets? I don't know. But there's John McCain. That old pouch in his cheek just working up and down like, oh, my God, be careful, John. You're going to blow your cheek out. Slow down. Talking about how much he, you know, I've had to work around Barbara Boxer. I was expecting he was going to use the C word on her. I mean, he came close, didn't he? Oh, my God. Oh, and let's not forget Joe Miller. Up in Alaska, who has his private goon squad arrest reporters to have the temerity to ask him a goddamn question. These are your teabaggers, folks. These are your teabaggers. Can you imagine? Can you imagine if somebody like Joe Miller were president? The press secretary would be a 20-star Marine commando general who still had, I don't know, dead body parts in his mouth. And he'd stand up there and say, "All right, who's got some questions for Mr. Miller?" And he'd have an M50 mounted on the podium there. Helen Thomas? Well, I just... These are teabaggers. Lynn, M are not teabaggers. O-S they are. See their itty-bitty brains? Lobby. M are teabaggers. No, M aren't. O-S they are. Roger is in Santa Monica. Hello, Roger.
Yeah, hi, Mike.
Hey.
Yeah. You know, this is getting into the last stretch election. And all these thugs, Republican, Joe Miller in Alaska, he handcuffed a reporter who tried to ask him some questions.
Yeah, yeah.
Same here with Meg Whitman. You know, she abused that employee at eBay. And then the New York Republican candidate for the governorship, he also had a...
Yeah, I know. You know, I understand, Roger, that out on the coast, y'all refer to Meg Whitman as Nutmeg, which I don't know. That seems highly appropriate. Roger, thanks. We got a break coming here. Appreciate you checking in. And that, you know that Sarah Palin just hates the fact that John Holmes is dead. You know she does.
Who's he talking about now, Myrtle? I don't know. John Holmes. Who is him?
Oh, my God. It's just unbelievable. Linda McMahon with a pair of carpet scissors chasing her husband around the ring to cut off his, you know, his penile member because he's having an affair with some, what, female wrestler or promotion? I don't know. Of course, everybody knows that professional wrestling is real, and I shouldn't make light of it because, you know, I mean, that's... Oh, my God. Who can take this seriously? Well, take it real seriously, because like I said at the beginning of the show, according to all the polls, the Republicans are going to gain 17,000 seats in the Senate, and they're going to have a 17,000-3 majority. And once that happens, of course, they're completely veto-proof and filibuster-proof. Plus 926 governorships are going to shift over to the Republicans. So take these candidates seriously.
Not only does this job, but does it happily. I'm the fear that keeps you awake. I'm the shadows on the wall. I'm the monsters they become. I'm the nightmare in your skull. I'm the dagger in your back. An extra turn on the rack. I'm the whimpering of your heart. A static.
Time to practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Republicans are so desperate to finally bring fascism to this country. They are running homeless people on the green ticket in order to split off the Democratic vote. They are running ads on television telling Latino voters to stay home on Election Day. The No Votes, a group, Latinos for Reform, is run by a Republican political consultant, Robert Desposada. He's a former Republican National Committee Director of Hispanic Affairs. He's the one saying, Obama has failed us! Obama has failed us! Don't vote! After all the work that real Latino leaders have done to convince people of Hispanic descent that they have a chance in this country if they do vote, which I don't know if that's true anymore anyway. Maybe a good idea is don't vote. Who knows? Anyway, Tim from L.A. writes regarding Sharon Angle, from an Asian American perspective. Tim writes, Mike, first I laughed at the stupidity of Sharon Angle's comments that the Hispanic children look Asian. But then I sat down and thought, what an insensitive, idiotic moron Sharon Angle is. Growing up Japanese in America was tough. When I graduated elementary school in the predominantly Mexican-American neighborhood of East L.A., then traveled 40 miles on bus to a junior high school full of white people, and rich, too, I wanted so badly to be white. I wanted to have what they had, all the cool toys, all the cool Sony Walkmans. I wanted it. I wished I were white so I could be the rich white folks like they were. Luckily, I had teachers, civic leaders, and local politicians who encouraged me to be proud of my heritage, to be proud of who I am, and to make sure that even though people may have all the cool toys in the world, I have something they don't, and that's culture. Fast forward to Sharon Angle. She said that the Hispanic kids look Asian. What kind of idiotic comment is that? They're Mexicans. They're Nicaraguans. They're Puerto Ricans. They are their own ethnic group. They are not Asian. So is Asian the in thing now? Are we now the race of coolness? Are we what the white folks used to be? Or are we the race where everything is keep to yourself or it cannot be helped and other Asian stereotypes? And is that what Sharon and every racist white person expect? Mike, Sharon Angle's comments can destroy a person's identity, and these Hispanics, like every other minority, has issues that need to be addressed. Addressed as, you are who you are, and be proud of your roots. Not, you look Asian! God damn, what a racist whore. No offense to sex workers. Tim from L.A. It's madness in this country. This country is, we're not on the verge of a nervous breakdown. It's swirling into the cesspool of, this is how fascism had to come to this country. Not an invasion, but from these vermin. It started with, as far as media, it started with Limbaugh. Limbaugh, who's paid hundreds of millions of dollars to destroy the country. And then picked up by the brown shirt, Glenn Beck. In the meantime, they had this little wimp, Hannity, who just couldn't cut it. That's why they had to unleash Beck. And as far as these politicians, these would-be politicians are concerned, have you ever seen anything like this? The lies, the deceit, the hypocrisy. And the stupidity, the total arrogant ignorance. These are people whose ignorance is worn proudly. The way you might display on your wall your master's degree or a PhD or a JD or even an undergraduate degree. You might have it in the part of your house, that your study, your den, whatever. These people have certificates up all over the place that say, I am a goddamn complete moron. I graduate from the school of idiocy. And they're proud of it. Now, how do you fight against that? Especially when their constituency feels the same way. Now, I realize there's a lot of hell going on in this country. How many people are unemployed now? 30 million? 20 million? How many people on food stamps? What's the poverty rate? What are the prospects for this easing? On the one hand, those numbers are high. On the other hand, what are the prospects for this easing? Those numbers are low. We're in a real transition period. And this is when the vermin strike. When it's dark, when everybody's left the kitchen, there happens to be a skillet full of bacon fat left out. This is when the roaches come out. And Jesus, God, take a look around at the roaches running around all over the countertops in this country. Look at them. Look at them. Smell their stink. Listen to what they're saying. And according to the pundits, they're going to win. The roaches are going to win. Yes. And you, Mike Malloy, your ass will be the first to go down. Wow. Piotr is in Chantilly, Virginia. Hello, Piotr.
Yes. Yes. Hello, Mike.
Hello.
Yes, I'm listening to your program. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. And when you, I really appreciate your sharp wit and insight about the tea buggers. And since I live in Virginia and I get a dose of Christine O'Donnell witchcraft, just people like this really scare me to death. You see, I came from Poland to the States in '86, and I'm really frightened to death because I can see that this country is becoming like a Nazi camp. Mm. And I got this scary feeling when the first Gulf War in 1990 began, and I could see the change in shape of the battle helmets of US GIs, which became, if you look at the shape of the helmet of US soldiers since 1990, they have this dip over the ear and looks almost like a Nazi helmet from the from 1939 or 1945, and this really freaks me out. Mm-hmm. And also, when you mentioned, I think unfortunately correctly, that those tea buggers think that they win, which I hope this will never happen. But this reminds me of something. A few years ago, I read several books by a Russian philosopher. His name is Nicholas Berdyaev, who wrote a bunch of books in 1919, 1925, in 1939, 1945, in Russia and France. And I can recall, I believe it was one of his books, which is titled Slavery and Freedom.
Mm-hmm.
He writes basically about Russia. And when he writes like this, that from 1850 until 1920, the next people that would come to power, they would become more primitive, more vile, more vicious, less intellectually and less spiritually developed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is what's happening in this country, that people become, as you said, like children. And this is really scary to me, because When I hear those tea buggers talking like children, this really scares me to death when they talk about abolishing, so-called Obamacare, mm-hmm. and Social Security. It's basically the law of the jungle, and this is what Adolf Hitler and Nazi Germany, he was exactly for that. People that were handicapped were executed, homosexuals were executed, gypsies were executed, and we don't have those camps here yet. But when people are going to start losing Medicare, food stamps, and Social Security, well, it's going to be here a big death camp, not exactly the way Nazis envisioned, but pretty close to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hear you loud and clear, loudly and clearly, I guess would be the more proper way to say that. I have friends. I've had friends all my life who are Polish, who had to flee, and they were not Jews. I had a very close business relationship with Polish Jews that had to leave because of the Nazis. But also, it wasn't just the Jews in Poland that the Nazis were determined to exterminate. And some of those people that fled and came to this country, and had their own children who are now my age, those children. And yet the stories from the families that I've heard in sitting around and talking with the second generation of these Polish refugees, the parallels of what is going on here. And the attitude, not so much, I mean, we don't have brown shirts yet marching down the streets. We don't have the SS. We don't have Gestapo. We don't have the outer trappings. We don't have the huge nighttime parades that Hitler was so fond of. We haven't developed yet our Leni Riefenstahl to record all of this. But the attitude that is extant in this country right now, that's the part that's scary. Piotr, thanks for checking in.
I think you're gonna feel you belong. Nocturnal vacation. Unnecessary sedation. Inside you're gonna feel right at home.
He's the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
Sam in L.A. wrote in, it's Dianne Feinstein, who's married to the war profiteer, the senator from California. Barbara Boxer, Sam writes, is a pretty great lady in my book. She's running against gnarly Carly Fiorina, who coined the phrase offshoring as in American Californian jobs while running Hewlett-Packard into the ground. She also got caught bugging the board of directors meetings for which she got canned. Meg the Square Peg Whitman, Harsh, that's her married name, has spent at least $120 million trying to buy the governor's mansion in Sacramento. Her son is a bigoted little snot as well. Jerry Brown would be welcome as our next governor compared to the likes of Meg. Okay. Sam? Appreciate it. Dave is in Rantoul, Illinois. Hello, Dave.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good. I just want to say thanks for turning me on to Prairie 2. I read his website as often as I can. I keep up to date on that. And
good.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, good. He's a good economics writer.
I appreciate you keep the campfire lit here every night. I enjoy listening to the show a lot, and it kind of gives me a connection to a like-minded person that I don't normally get in my regular everyday life, so I appreciate that, too. About these teabaggers, there's just so many of them that are just so completely not in touch with reality, whether it's Miss O'Donnell or Miss Engel. But I got a comment about Joe Miller from Alaska and handcuffing the reporter. I was fixing dinner the other day, and I caught that on TV, and it just, there's a point to where it's just not really that much fun anymore. And that was the moment where I really just kind of got a little bit disturbed.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree, Dave. I mean, it's one thing to be an ignorant bastard like so many of these teabaggers are. It's something else again to feel that you can handcuff a reporter for asking a question and do it and have the muscle behind you to do it. I made a mention a minute ago that the brown shirts haven't shown up yet. Well, they haven't shown up in the khakis and the black ties, but they damn sure are here.
Yeah, and some of them are going to get through the cracks on election night. It's one of my days off, so I'm going to be watching closely, and I'm concerned. We're not going in a very good direction in this country. And when these people get some power, I mean, you know, these people slap handcuffs. I mean, his security entourage handcuffed a reporter for trying to ask a question. I mean, that's just
madness.
That's crazy. So, Mike, I don't know where we're going in this country, but it's not a good place. And I'm really concerned. So, I mean, Kate, I just want to let you go. Thanks for having a great show, and I appreciate all you do.
Thanks, Dave. Very kind words. Thank you. I appreciate the compliment. Tom is in Mount Airy, Maryland. Hello, Tom.
Hey, Mike. Hey, you're absolutely correct about teabaggers being proud of their ignorance. I have a regular customer coming into my station in the morning. The other day, he was looking at the papers,
And he said, you know what I think's funny? And I'm thinking, oh, no, no, not really. And he goes on, he says, well, these Chilean miners, you know, they got people all over the world going rescue and stuff, but they ain't got none Muslim countries there. And I said, well, how is that related at all? And he said, well, they always say they're a religion of peace. And he had that proud smirk.
Mm-hmm.
Just obese, disgusting. And it made my brain fart. I was flabbergasted.
Well, but that's the kind of ignorance. I mean, when you have a Senate candidate like Christine O'Donnell, who thinks that the audience is laughing with her when her opponent is trying to explain to her that the First Amendment specifically orders a separation of church and state. Not using those words, but this is where, thanks, Tom, I got to leave there. This is where the fifth grade-like nature of these miserable teabag thugs really comes in. Christine O'Donnell, I guess, expects that there should be an amendment to the Constitution that says the Congress shall guarantee a separation of church and state. These people do not understand constitutional law. They don't understand the Constitution. They have a tenuous grasp on English. They have no understanding of history. Nothing where it concerns so-called social studies, American history, American government. They don't have a clue. But that's why I think so many American voters like them. Because this gives the average jerkwad Republican out there a chance to feel for the first time in his miserable teabagger life superior.
You see Christine O'Donnell last night? God damn, she's dumber than a sack full of baby snot. But you know what? She really made that Coons guy look like a fool, didn't she? She isn't very bright, but, you know, beats the hell out of him.
It's that kind of attitude. Wrapped in a flag, carrying a Bible. And it took about 80 years since those words were written. That's how fascism comes to the United States. All right, you want some real fascism? You want some fascism that should make your hair stand on end? Stick around. I'm going to tell you about Abdullah al-Kid. You may already know about him. And John Ashcroft. John Ashcroft, who was terrified of depictions of women's breasts. Terrified.
Oh my God, look at the size of those breasts. Oh, we have to cover those up. I'm hunting for terrorists. I had 7 deferments to keep me out of Vietnam, but I am terrified of breasts.
7 past the hour. John Ashcroft, as promised. This is a very weird situation. There is a case working its way toward the Supreme Court, and it is not based on the merits of the case involving Ashcroft at all, but rather on the issue of whether or not John Ashcroft, as Attorney General of the United States, or any Attorney General, can be held responsible for a type of law enforcement, with quotes around that phrase, that is absolutely criminal. Let me give you the background. Abdullah Al-Kid. Ooh, that's a Muslim name, Mike! Yeah, I know. It's not Joe O'Flaherty. It's Abdullah Al-Kid, an American, born in Kansas, a football star in college, and then he converted to Islam. Oh, no! Got to wonder what his name was before that, right? What was it? Joe O'Flaherty? Anyway, he converted to Islam. Now, John Ashcroft was the attorney general, the worst in the history of this country, according to a lot of legal experts. He was the attorney general who approved a policy that led to the arrest of dozens of people without evidence of crimes, including Abdullah Al-Kid, during the Bush administration's decision to take advantage of the panic and fear in this country that started September 11th, 2001. And now the Supreme Court will decide whether Al-Kid can try, through a civil lawsuit, to prove that Ashcroft should be held personally responsible for Al-Kid's arrest. It's just one of several instances where Ashcroft's style during the period following the September 11th attacks that has ended up spawning lawsuits. Now Ashcroft, I'm sure you remember this crazy bastard. And whatever you do, Kathy, do not play his singing tonight. Ashcroft, his father was a minister in the Assemblies of God. No big surprise there. Ashcroft went to a school in Missouri. He attended Yale. He's a member of Sigma Tau Gamma fraternity and the St. Elmo Society. Look it up. He graduated in 1964, and he got his law degree, University of Chicago School of Law. After law school, Ashcroft briefly taught business law and worked as an administrator at Southwest Missouri State University. The only reason he did that was so he could avoid combat or going into the military during Vietnam. He received 6 student military draft deferments and 1 occupational deferment because he was, teaching. 7. He's just like Dick Cheney, another one of these pasty-faced white boys who are all in favor of war as long as dark-skinned people go fight it. He's a coward, an absolute coward. He wasn't politically opposed. Don't misunderstand me. People who are politically opposed or were to the Vietnam War, God bless them. People politically opposed to Iraq and Afghanistan and our murderous activities over there, I'm in complete agreement with. But this rat bastard, John Ashcroft, was purely and simply a coward. 6 student deferments, 1 occupational deferment because he was teaching business law. Mm-hmm. Now, he wouldn't go into the military, but he did believe in protecting us from, among other things, the breasts on a statue. You remember the Spirit of Justice censorship? In 2002, Ashcroft, like the attorneys general before him, would hold press conferences in the Great Hall of the Justice Department. And there's a partially nude female statue there, titled The Spirit of Justice. The statue has a sculpted drape around its lower half to, oh my God, prevent the world from seeing a vagina. But her breasts, the statue's breasts, were prominent. And Ashcroft freaked out. He ordered that the breasts be covered with blue curtains. along with, there was another statue there, the male counterpart, that was titled The Majesty of Law. So the spirit of justice and majesty of law was too much for Ashcroft with, you know, things sticking out. So he had the things covered up. It was speculated at the time that the change was made because Ashcroft felt that reporters were photographing him with the female statue in the background just to make fun of his opposition to pornography. Remember, right before the bombing of the World Trade Center, Ashcroft's main goal was to rid the world, starting here in the United States, of pornography. That was his goal. That was his goal. So he was terrified of physically supporting a war that he was greatly in favor of as long as somebody else went there. He got 7 deferments to keep his lily white ass out of it. But when it came to huge statue breasts, oh my God! So $8,000 were spent for the curtains to cover up statue breasts. Okay? Now, Ashcroft was also a clear case, as was everybody in the Cheney Bush administration, a clear example of what fascism would look like in America. It's religio-fascism. So Ashcroft decided that following the September 11th terror attacks, he would use a tactic that no other attorney general has used to the extent that Ashcroft has. He would have no evidence to arrest somebody, even though they had the best prima facie evidence against them, which was they had an Arab-sounding name and they were Muslim. So he would have them arrested and held as material witnesses. A material witness is somebody who has absolute information about a crime that was committed. Now, even though Abdullah al-Kid was nowhere near anything that had anything to do with the Bush-Cheney-engineered attacks on this country on September 11th, he was married. He had family, a couple of kids. But his name, even though al-Kid was nowhere near anything that had anything to do with September 11th, Ashcroft had him arrested. Now, you remember, there were hundreds of American citizens with Arab-sounding names who were arrested immediately after the attack on September 11th. Remember that? FBI Director Robert Mueller boasted in congressional testimony that al-Kid's arrest was one of 5 major anti-terrorism coups for the agency, including the arrest of alleged 9/11 mastermind Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. So the FBI persuaded a judge to issue an arrest warrant for al-Kid by contending that he had paid $5,000 for a one-way ticket to Saudi Arabia. And, of course, when the FBI persuaded the judge, they neglected to mention to the judge that he was an American citizen and he had a wife and children in the United States. The claim about the ticket was false. He had a round trip, much cheaper ticket. It was not a one-way ticket to Saudi Arabia. In addition, his attorneys contend he had cooperated fully with authorities following September 11th. Lee Gelernt, an American Civil Liberties Union lawyer who is representing al-Kid, said, quote, "The FBI never told him he might be needed as a witness or told him not to travel abroad," end quote. Instead, these agents blindsided this young man at the airport. Al-Kid said he was strip-searched, shackled during his 16 days in detention, and he remained under severe restrictions for the next 14 months. This is a result of Cheney, Bush, Ashcroft policy. There's more. Stay with me.
Telling me.
Hey, truth seekers, gather around the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
Anyone past the hour. So a case that is working its way before the Supreme Court, whether or not John Ashcroft, and by extension any attorney general, can be held responsible for illegal acts, criminal acts, against someone who has done nothing. The case involves Abdullah Al-Kid, an American from Kansas, a football star in college. The case is Ashcroft versus Al-Kid. Anyway, Al-Kid was one of 70 people detained under a law aimed at ensuring that material witnesses would be available to appear in court and testify at trial, according to a study by Civil Liberties Group. Now, like many other people that were rounded up by the Bush crime family, Al-Kid was never called to testify before anyone, grand jury or whatever, open court. He was not charged with the crime, nothing. In the United States of America, this man was picked up and held in prison, shackled, handcuffed, interrogated. He did nothing. There was no warrant against him. No crime had been committed. Ashcroft decided to use a vague charge of, this guy's a material witness. For what? Nothing. And nobody ever said for what case, what crime, what action. They just grabbed him. He sued Ashcroft. And Al-Kid asserted that his arrest stemmed from a policy announced by Ashcroft when he was then attorney general, less than 2 months after 9/11. And at that time, Ashcroft made a big deal about the use of material witness warrants to detain suspected terrorists when the government didn't have any evidence to hold them on criminal charges. Ashcroft made a big deal about it. He said, yeah, well, I've got it all figured out here. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to grab these people, hold them on material witness charges when there's nothing against them. There's no reason to hold them, but this is a way we can snatch them all up because, you know, this guy, especially Abdullah Al-Kid. Are you kidding me? My Assemblies of God background tells me that this guy would like to murder Jesus. So let's get him. And get him. They did. Now, the lawsuit has not gone to trial. And Ashcroft says he should be shielded from lawsuits concerning his official duties. Guess who's back? Who's representing him in court? The Obama administration. That's his defense attorneys. The Solicitor General, I would imagine. Solicitor General Neil Katyal took the place of Elena Kagan, who's now Supreme Court Justice, who, by the way, will recuse herself when this case does come before the Supreme Court. But the acting Solicitor General for the Obama administration said, quote, the former Attorney General should not be subjected to burdensome litigation and potential damages for the conduct of his subordinates, end quote. Even though the policy was designed and put in place by Ashcroft, the argument by the Obama administration is that Ashcroft should not be held responsible for what his underlings did. Well, for Christ's sake, his underlings were only doing what he ordered them to do. You see how crazy things have become? Huh? 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 Now, this is a guy who publicly identified former Army scientist Stephen Hatfield as a person of interest in the investigation of the anthrax attacks in 2001, which also were engineered by Dick Cheney. There's no doubt in my mind about that at all. Hatfield eventually was cleared, and he collected almost $6 million in a settlement of a lawsuit accusing the Justice Department of violating his privacy. In a previous Supreme Court case, Ashcroft and FBI Director Mueller prevailed over a detainee who sought to hold them liable for his confinement. In that case, the court voted 5-4 that the detainee, Javaid Iqbal of Pakistan, could not tie the high-ranking officials closely enough to his nearly 6 months in solitary confinement in 2002 to allow his claims against him to be heard, to go forward. But in this case, Al-Kid is relying heavily on statements by Ashcroft and other top justice officials to claim that his detention resulted directly from the policy that Ashcroft announced. Now, we're going to take a break. I want you to think about this for just a second. The top law enforcement officer in the United States during the bad old years of the Bush crime family, which are still happening, the top law enforcement official decides to turn the law into a whore, a prostitute, even though he insisted that the Statue of Justice have her breasts draped. But he wants to totally prostitute the law and arrest people with Arab-sounding names and hold them as material witnesses. And now the chickens, all these years later, coming home to roost to say to Ashcroft and subsequent attorneys general, you can't do this. There's the Constitution. Where are you teabag sons of bitches? We're always talking about the Constitution. Where are you on this one?
Not really hearing what you said. Oh no. Put an ear to the ground, put the words in my mouth. All the sideways looks never mattered until now. It's a long ride, it's a downside, it's what it's all about. And I think that you better this out in the big light that solves everything. It's hanging upon your lips again.
Do you know if you
he's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
Look at the state of the world that we live in, where no one gives a damn about the future of children. Just build
25 before the hour. All right, what we're talking about here is the WikiLeaks document dump that is coming up possibly tomorrow, maybe this week. As many as 500,000 Iraq war documents. You remember the last time WikiLeaks did this, it was 70,000 Afghan war documents. That was back in July. The documents did not contain any massive revelations, stuff the American public should not have already been aware of, but we don't because we have no collective memory of anything. We don't pay attention to anything. Everything happens within a 24-hour cycle and then it's on to something new. Now, WikiLeaks, as you know, is an organization, it's a nonprofit. It's put together by human rights campaigners, journalists, and members of the general public. The Pentagon has demanded it return classified information, and critics, of course, have criticized its perceived anti-war agenda. I don't know that WikiLeaks is anti-war. I think what it is anti-lies. That means capitalist America or capitalist world would be completely against it. Capitalism runs on lies. Lies are the lifeblood of capitalism, just like Muslim baby blood is the lifeblood for Dick Cheney. So WikiLeaks is can be perceived as anti-war, I guess, when they show a video of American military personnel butchering a dozen people just for sheer sport. Is that anti-war? Well, according to the teabaggers or the right-wingers, of course. Now, the investigation by the Pentagon and the Justice Department, I guess, the Obama administration, or whoever, the investigation into the leak of the Afghan war documents is focused on one Bradley Manning. Remember him? He's a name. There's a guy who is being slowly inserted into the memory hole so that nobody will remember who he is and he can be tortured to provide the information that the Pentagon wants. Where did you get these documents? How did you get them to WikiLeaks? Anyway, he worked as an Army intelligence analyst in Iraq. Manning is already under arrest, charged with leaking a classified video showing that helicopter attack that killed a dozen people, including the Reuters journalists. So, the new dump is coming this week. Now, We will report on that, of course, as it comes in. But here's a question for you, and it's brought up. It's in the LA Times last Saturday, I think, written by Colleen Rowley and Bogdan Zakovic. Now, Bogdan Zakovic, you may not heard of, but surely you know who Colleen Rowley is. She was the FBI analyst, special agent for more than 20 years. She was legal counsel to the FBI field office in Minneapolis for 13 years. And she was the one who tried to warn everybody. So did Bogdan Zakovic. He was a special agent for the FAA security division. All right, they got together and they wrote something for the LA Times. And I just want to share with you what they wrote. WikiLeaks has been around. WikiLeaks, if, damn it, I'll get it eventually here. Boo! Okay, here we go. If WikiLeaks had been around in 2001, could the events of 9/11 have been prevented?
Uh-oh.
The idea is worth considering. WikiLeaks has drawn both high praise and searing criticism for its mission of publishing leaked documents without revealing their source. But we suspect the world hasn't yet fully seen WikiLeaks' potential. Let us explain. There were a lot of us in the run-up to September 11th, 2001, who had seen warning signs that something devastating might be in the planning stages. But we worked for ossified bureaucracies incapable of acting quickly and decisively. Lately, the two of us have been wondering how things might have been different if there had been a quick, confidential way to get information out. One of us, Colleen Rowley, was a special agent and legal counsel for the FBI's Minneapolis division and worked closely with those who arrested would-be terrorist Zacharias Moussaoui on an immigration violation less than a month before the World Trade Center was destroyed. Following up on a tip from flight school instructors who had become suspicious of this French Moroccan who claimed to want to fly a jet as an, quote, ego boost, end quote, Special Agent Harry Samet and an INS immigration colleague had detained Moussaoui. A foreign intelligence service promptly reported that Moussaoui had connections with a foreign terrorist group. But FBI and officials in Washington inexplicably turned down Agent Samet's request for authority to search Moussaoui's laptop computer and personal effects. Now, I, Mike Malloy, will come back to that sentence in a moment. Those same officials, Rowley and Zakovic, right? Those same officials stonewalled Agent Samet's supervisor, who pleaded with them in late August 2001 that he was, quote, trying to keep someone from taking a plane and crashing it into the World Trade Center, end quote. Yes, he was that explicit. I'm trying to keep someone from taking a plane and crashing it into the World Trade Center. I have to have this guy investigated. No. No, came the reply from Washington. Later, testifying at Moussaoui's trial, Agent Samet testified that he believed the behavior of his FBI supervisors in Washington constituted, quote, criminal negligence. And we'll come back to that in a moment, too. The 9/11 Commission, Rowley and Zakovic write, ultimately concluded that Moussaoui was most likely being primed as a September 11th replacement pilot, and that the hijackers probably would have postponed their strike if information about his arrest had been announced. WikiLeaks might have provided a pressure valve for those agents who were terribly worried about what might happen, what was about to happen, and frustrated by their superiors' seeming indifference. And I'll have more on that in a moment, too. They were indeed stuck, Rowley and Zakovic write. They were stuck in a perplexing no-win ethical dilemma as time ticked away. Their bosses issued continual warnings against talking to the media and frowned on whistleblowing. Yet the agents felt a strong need to protect the public. The other one of us writing this piece, Federal Air Marshal Bogdan Zakovic, once co-led the Federal Aviation Administration's Red Team to probe for vulnerabilities in airport security. He also has a story of how warnings were ignored in the run-up to September 11th. In repeated tests of security, his team found weaknesses 9 out of 10 times that would make it possible for hijackers to smuggle weapons aboard and seize control of airplanes. But the team's reports were ignored and suppressed. I'll have more on that in a moment, too. And the team was shut down entirely after 9/11. In testimony to the 9/11 Commission, Zakovic summed up his experience this way, quote, "The Red Team was extraordinarily successful in killing, quote, quote, large numbers of innocent people in the simulated attacks. And yet we were ordered not to write up our reports and not to retest airports where we found particularly egregious vulnerabilities. Finally, the FAA started providing advanced notification of when we would be conducting our so-called undercover tests and what we would be checking," end quote. In other words, the FAA, on somebody's orders, started notifying the airports, "Uh-oh, the boys are coming. Clean up your act for today." The 9/11 Commission included none of Zakovic's testimony in its report. Looking back, Zakovic believes that if WikiLeaks had existed at the time, he would have gone to it as a last resort to highlight what he knew were serious vulnerabilities that were being ignored. Now, what has happened to Mr. Zakovic, Agent Zakovic, since all this happened? For the past 9 years, he has been relegated to entry-level staff work for the Transportation Security Administration. In other words, since he was a civil servant, they couldn't fire him, so they put him in a job that people go to when they first enter. And this guy was a former special agent for the FAA Security Division. He filed a formal whistleblower disclosure against the FAA for ignoring the vulnerabilities documented by the Red Team. And for that, he's been sent to the basement, sent to his room. Colleen Rowley, as you know, a special agent for more than 20 years. From 1990 to 2003... she was the legal counsel in the field office, FBI field office in Minneapolis. She, of course, has not worked for the FBI for quite some time. All right, some comments now on what they wrote in the LA Times when we come back.
Can't get no fancy notes on my blue guitar. I can't get no like the reason in you. Somehow your motives are impure. Somehow I can't find a cure. Can you know when you fall?
Before the hour. Ashcroft, there's no argument here, but by any measurement, any standard, Ashcroft was the worst attorney general. A lot of people say, no, it was Gonzales. Other people say, no, it was John Yoo. Was Yoo attorney general? No, was he attorney general? No, he wasn't. He was special advisor. But Gonzales, who authorized the torture memos, further perverting our constitutional system of government, It's right up there with Ashcroft. And the thing you notice about these rat bastards, they're part of the crime family that set in motion the final wave of destroying the country. Reagan started it. And it took him another 20 years after Reagan, or from the onset of Reagan, it took 20 years, you know, after Reagan initiated the largest tax increase. what do you have? 7 tax increases, I think Reagan did. And yet these dumb bastard right-wing teabagger Republican freaks, you know, constantly walk around telling you, well, you know, Ronald Reagan, he's a great American. He didn't wear taxes. The teabaggers are worse than the Know-Nothing Party. They are just absolute zombies. They're zombies. And it appears that because this unfocused anger has been fomented by the ruling class, the capitalists, the teabaggers are going to rise to positions of legislative power. Now, this will benefit no Americans except 0.1%, the top, the very top, the very absolute pinnacle, the billionaires will love this. And the stupid bastard teabagger types will continue in their own hanging. It's incredible. I've never seen such a collection of idiots and ignoramuses as these teabagger Republican right-wingers. Never, never. I thought it was bad under Reagan. I thought it was worse under Cheney and Bush, too. And I thought Newt Gingrich during the Clinton reign, I thought Newt Gingrich epitomized the worst possible example of a proto-fascist who was hellbound to destroy the country. I thought Newt was really, he got very close to doing it with a complete shutdown. But now all of a sudden, the it is very much hip on the right wing to elect people who have had no experience at anything. Not just no experience at government, but no experience at anything, except maybe being advocates for religious right insanity, like stop masturbating, or if you're raped and get pregnant, you're going to have the baby, or women should shut up and stay home, you know, that kind of stuff. And now they're as bad as the Reagan devolution was, as bad as the Bush-Cheney crime family was. What's coming November 2nd is an absolute avalanche of ignorance, stupidity, bigotry, determination to destroy everything that it's taken 80 years in this country to try to build. And yeah, I dated it 80 years. Going back to the 30s, after one of the so-called cycles where capitalism tried to absolutely destroy the country. It happens, what, it's accelerated. It used to be every 15, 20 years. Now it's down to about every 5 or 6, right? So now in place will be a series of office holders, or a collection of office holders, a series of court rulings, and an absolute gutting of the American economy to the point where the teabaggers and the fascists and the capitalists who truly hate the working class and the middle class will reach an ascendant point that I don't know if they'll ever be dislodged. And to all the people who have, over the years, sent emails to me chortling about this and guffawing and using all the insults that you could possibly use, none of which were coherent against my point of view, okay, you're about to get what you want. And you remember, be careful what you ask for. But if you stupid bastards really do think that the teabag neo-fascist wave that's about to break over this country is somehow going to spare you and your government income and your government protection from disease, the cost of disease, I should say, if you think that's going to happen, I'll be around to laugh my bony liberal ass off as you right-wingers sink in your own mucus. It is coming. According to all the pundits, it is coming. There is no way out. Huh? That's what the pundits are saying. Are they right? Well, sure. Aren't they always right? Aren't the proprietary programs that run the voting machines that have been outsourced, democracy outsourced to right-wing religious capitalist America? Who'd have thunk it? Who'd have thunk it? That stealing elections would become so simple. Hey, we got these voting machines. Just touch the screen. I'll see you tomorrow night, all right? I won't be saying that too much longer, I don't think. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.